Welcome to the Canadian Nutrition Society podcast, Nutrition Conversations, a podcast dedicated to exploring the latest research in nutrition and health in Canada. In each episode, we invite expert guests to share their insight and knowledge on a wide range of topics, from dietary patterns to sports nutrition, food insecurity, and food sustainability. Whether you're looking to improve your own health and wellness, or simply stay up to date on the latest developments in the field of nutrition, we hope you'll join us on this journey to better understand the role food plays in our lives. Please note that the views expressed by speakers in CNS podcasts are those of the speaker and not necessarily of CNS. Sitting in the host chair in this episode is the scientific director of the Canadian Nutrition Society, Dr. Sharon Panahi, who will be talking to Dr. Agnes Sue Ling Tay on Season 2, Episode 11 of Nutrition Conversations, on the role of nutrition in healthy aging with a focus on the strengthening health in elderly through nutrition study. This podcast is sponsored by Abbott.
Hello, Nutrition Conversations listeners. The world's over 65 population is expanding rapidly, and the risk of malnutrition is prevalent in this population. Meeting nutritional needs is a recognized strategy to reduce and address multiple debilitating adverse health outcomes associated with malnutrition. Joining us on this episode is Dr. Agnes Sue Ling Tay, Senior Lead of Clinical Science and Nutrition at Abbott in Singapore. Her research centers on pioneering dietary strategies to prevent and manage malnutrition, cardiometabolic diseases, and obesity. With over 50 contributions to international peer-reviewed journals, book chapters, and an evidence-based position statement for the National Heart Foundation of New Zealand, Dr. Tay is also an esteemed editor and reviewer for various scientific journals. Prior to joining Abbott in 2016, Dr. Tay was a research fellow at the Clinical Nutrition Research Center of Singapore's Agency for Science, Technology, and Research. At Abbott, she provided scientific leadership as the study chair and lead scientist for the Strengthening Health in the Elderly Through Nutrition, otherwise known as the SHIELD Study, on elderly nutrition, and has led several randomized controlled trials in diabetes. Her broad expertise includes clinical research on malnutrition in older adults and cardiometabolic diseases in populations who are overweight or living with obesity. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome you, Agnes, to episode 11 of season 2 of Nutrition Conversations.
Thanks very much, Shireen. It is an honor and pleasure to be here today.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. I know we have a little bit of a time difference here, and it's midnight there, so I think about 13 hours. And so we really appreciate you joining us, considering that you must it must be very late and you're tired. So maybe we'll get started here and talk a little bit about your journey. And so you've had a really fascinating path in nutrition science, and based on what I've read in terms of your biography, sort of spanning continents where you've done a lot of your graduate work in New Zealand, and now you're making an impact for Abbott's nutrition business. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your story and your path in terms of what initially drew you to nutrition research. So if you can maybe give us a little bit of background on this journey of yours, that would be great.
Yes, of course. I spent 12 years of my life in Dunedin, New Zealand, and I completed my bachelor's degree, master's, and PhD in human nutrition at the University of Otago. I also worked a couple of years in the same department after my PhD. The reason I chose to do my grad work at Otago was because it has one of the most prestigious human nutrition departments in the Southern Hemisphere, and the staff are actually world leaders in their chosen research areas. And in 2013, I decided to move back to Asia to be closer to my family and to incorporate the nutrition knowledge and research skill sets I acquired from New Zealand to really benefit the Asian society. I joined ASTAR, a lead research organization in Singapore, as a research fellow.
And so I know, I mean, a lot of people who do finish grad school, they're often thinking of academia, and, you know, you've been working in industry for some time now. So I'm just curious to know what led you to Abbott.
That's a great question. In 2016, I decided to take on new challenges and move to Abbott, a global healthcare leader. My goal is really to translate the science and develop nutritional products that can help people to live life to the fullest. This is something that keeps me going at work each day. The translational part of the science is something that I really enjoy. And my main role at Abbott is to design and conduct clinical research to understand the efficacy of nutritional products in different population groups, like older adults at risk of malnutrition or even people with diabetes. As a nutrition scientist, I also work closely with cross-functional teams to create science-based nutritional products and to address unique nutritional needs of people with different health conditions. This excites me a lot, and it's really where my passion lies.
Oh, that's amazing. And I really like the part you mentioned about translating the science. And so with the work that you do, I know that with the aging population growing globally, addressing the challenges such as, for example, muscle mass decline, increased risk of chronic diseases and malnutrition, they've obviously become quite important, increasingly urgent, I would say. And so nutrition, we know, plays a big role in mitigating a lot of these risks. And the SHIELD study that I mentioned earlier that we're going to be focusing on, so as we mentioned, it stands for Strengthening Health in the Elderly. It stands out as an innovative approach to tackling some of these issues. So could you maybe start by giving us an overview of the SHIELD study? So what it is, its objectives, the population targeted, and you know what's sort of unique about it in the realm of aging and nutrition research. I know it's a pretty comprehensive study, so maybe you can sort of touch on some of those aspects.
Yeah, you're right, Shirin. It's a big study and it's pretty complicated. Well, let me start by sharing with you an overview of the SHIELD study. It consists of two parts. Part one of the study was a cross-sectional study involving 1,211 community-dwelling older adults aged 65 years and above in Singapore, with 400 of them screened to be normal nutritional status and 811 of them screened to be at risk of malnutrition using malnutrition universal screening tool. The objective of the cross-sectional study was to really look at the prevalence and factors associated with low muscle mass and suboptimal nutritional status in elderly. And part two of the SHIELD study was a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial. And the objective of the randomized controlled trial, the RCT, is to investigate the effects of nutrition intervention on clinical, nutritional, and functional outcomes in 811 community-dwelling older adults at risk of malnutrition. I would say there are a lot of factors that make the SHIELD study unique. First, it is the largest nutrition study of its kind to really look at nutritional and muscle health in over 1,200 older adults. It also has robust study design with the longest oral nutritional supplement trial in Southeast Asia, 6 months of intervention and 6 months of follow-up. And we have a very comprehensive nutrition reference database in older Asian adults with this study. And more importantly, something that's very unique to this study is the population group. The reason we conducted the SHIELD study is because most of the malnutrition research today focused on hospitalized patients. Given that population is aging rapidly, like what you actually highlighted during the introduction just now, it will be very important for us to shift the focus from inpatients to community dwellers. How can we help the community dwelling older adults to maintain good health and prevent them from admitting to the hospital in the first place? We do believe that the findings from this study will benefit the people both in Asia and worldwide. Lastly, what makes the SHIELD study unique is that this was a joint trial between Abbott and public institutions. So we worked with SingHealth Polyclinics and Changi General Hospital in Singapore. We believe it is very important to build multi-sectoral public-private partnership to support healthy aging, Because if you think about it, the clinicians can really provide inputs on the pressing health issues that faced by their patients. And the scientists from the industry can develop products tailored to the preferences and nutritional needs of these patients. To me, this kind of public-private partnership can often provide the best health outcomes for the patients.
Great, thank you for that. And I guess with the study, I know you talked about the objectives. You mentioned that it's a two-part study, and you mentioned that, you know, there was a cross-sectional component as well as a randomized controlled trial. So maybe to give some context for our audience, could you touch a little bit on the design and maybe give us a little bit more detail on the two parts, particularly with respect to the interventions that were used?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, there are two main types of studies, namely like observational studies and interventional studies. So in the SHU study, we have both parts. The observational studies, such as cross-sectional studies, they do not allocate participants to receive a particular treatment, whereas interventions do. So in a cross-sectional study, data are collected on the study population at a single point in time. So we can examine the relationship between disease and the exposure. Cross-sectional studies provide a snapshot of the frequency of a disease in the population at a given point of time. For instance, in part one of the SHU study, the cross-sectional study, we look at the prevalence of low muscle mass and factors associated with low muscle mass in community-dwelling older adults. So that's the first type of study design. And the second type of study design that we used in the SHU study was a randomized controlled trial, which is also known as the RCT. In an RCT, study participants are randomly assigned to different groups. The experimental group will receive the intervention that's being tested, and a comparison group, like the controls, will receive a conventional treatment or placebo. These groups are then followed prospectively to look at the effectiveness of the intervention compared with the control group. So for part two of the SHIELD study, the randomized controlled trial, the experimental group received oral nutritional supplement, ONS with HMB, and dietary counseling, while the control group received placebo supplement and dietary counseling. All participants were asked to consume the study products twice a day for 6 months, followed by a 6-month follow-up period where they were not given any study products. Outcomes were collected at specific time points in this study, at baseline, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. And this was a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial, which is considered the gold standard of intervention studies, because double-blind reduces bias, as neither the researchers nor the participants actually aware of the treatment the participants received. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I appreciate that you defined some of those terms. I know most of our listeners are perhaps familiar, but I appreciate that you've discussed some of the differences between cross-sectional as well as cross-sectional research as well as RCTs. And so studies like SHIELD that you're discussing, they often reveal valuable information about how tailored nutrition interventions can improve health outcomes. And you've measured numerous factors related to muscle health and strength, biochemical and hematological indices, as well as a lot of the nutritional biomarkers. You also shared a lot of papers with me, several papers in which you are author on. And so for our listeners, if you're interested in I don't have a list of these and these papers, but on PubMed, there are numerous articles related to this study. And so there's a lot of data published, and maybe we can talk about some of those key findings, particularly with regard to muscle health, strength, and malnutrition, and perhaps how some of these findings can contribute to the broader conversation around healthy aging and supporting older adults. So if you can maybe discuss some of those key findings, that would be great.
Yep. That's a great question. There are many interesting findings from the SHIELD study. So maybe let me share by the two parts. The first part is actually the cross-sectional study, and follow that, I will talk about the results from the randomized controlled trial. So in terms of muscle health, in the cross-sectional study, we actually found that 1 in 5 older adults with normal nutritional status have low muscle mass, whereas 4 in 5 older adults at risk of malnutrition have low muscle mass. And in fact, 76% of them have sarcopenia. It is concerning that older adults at risk of malnutrition have 4 times greater risk of having low muscle mass compared to their nourished counterparts. It clearly indicates that for older adults with malnutrition, screening for low muscle mass is of high priority. And the other interesting finding that we found for nutritional biomarkers is that approximately 60% of the study participants have vitamin D deficiency or insufficiency. Despite living in Singapore, a sunny tropical country situated near the equator with lots of sunshine every day. And imagine living in a country that's far away from the equator, and during winter time, the people there would likely have a higher prevalence of vitamin D deficiency or insufficiency compared to what we observe in the SHIELD study. The good news is, in the randomized controlled trial, older adults in the oral nutritional supplement group had significantly better health outcomes compared to the placebo group. It is important to highlight that the community-dwelling older adults in the SHIELD study, they were relatively healthy, though they had malnutrition risk. In fact, 89% of the participants were independent with a modified Bartel index score of 100. Modified Bartel index is a way to measure functional independence for 10 activities of daily living. The level score ranges from 0 to 20 as total dependent to 100 as independent. In addition, 93% of the study participants had a Chalson comorbidity score of 0. Chalson comorbidity index is a widely used, simple, and valid method to evaluate both the number and severity of comorbidities. And in this study, only 11% of the study participants had hospital admission 6 months prior to baseline visit. As we can see, we have a very healthy and robust group of participants in this study. Yet we still found that oral nutritional supplement with HMB and dietary counseling led to significant improvement in health outcomes, such as survival with no hospital admission and at least a 5% weight gain. For nutritional outcomes, ONS group significantly lowered malnutrition risk, increased body weight, and mid upper arm circumference. ONS was also effective in increasing vitamin D and vitamin B12 levels. 2 servings of the study oral nutritional supplement provide over 76% of the recommended dietary allowance for vitamin D and vitamin B12 for adults aged 50 years and above. We also have muscle health results, whereby leg strength and hand grip strength were significantly higher in the ONS group compared to the placebo group. More importantly, at 12 months, hospital readmission risk was significantly reduced by 33% in the ONS group compared to placebo. Another encouraging result is that we found that number of sick days and the odds of having A&E visits and polyclinic visits were lower in the ONS group compared to placebo. Findings from the SHIELD study have already been considered for nutritional guidelines. For instance, it was cited in the recently published evidence-based expert consensus statement from the Asian Working Group for Sarcopenia, AWGS, highlighting the roles of nutrition in muscle health of community-dwelling older adults.
Great. And, you know, I really appreciate you defining some of those terms, which are new for me, like the modified Bartel index and the Charleston comorbidity score. And what was interesting to me in terms of the nutritional biomarkers was that you mentioned the vitamin D. And so considering it's such a, you know, Singapore is a sunny tropical country, you had such a high number of participants with a vitamin D deficiency. So I can only imagine what it's like in countries like Canada. And so bridging the gap between research findings and everyday application, we know it's always a challenge, especially when working with diverse populations, such as older adults. And so given these findings that you've discussed, what sort of practical strategies or recommendations in terms of screening and intervention do you feel that healthcare providers and caregivers can adopt to ensure better nutrition and health for the older population?
Well, based on the SHU study findings, we recommend that healthcare providers and caregivers screen older adults living in the community for malnutrition risk on an annual basis. Older adults with malnutrition should also be screened for sarcopenia, as these two conditions often overlap. When we treat one condition, it's likely that the other condition will also be improved, just like what we have shown in the SHU study. We also recommend that healthcare providers and caregivers promote good nutrition among older adults and help them to get adequate calories, protein, and vitamin D intakes to ensure that they actually can maintain their nutritional and muscle health, especially for those at risk of malnutrition or sarcopenia. And next, for older adults with malnutrition or at risk of malnutrition with chronic conditions, they should really be offered oral nutritional supplement when dietary counseling and food fortification are not sufficient to increase dietary intake and reach their nutritional goals. Incorporating oral nutritional supplement in the management of malnutrition can help older adults to live an independent and meaningful life for as long as possible. And lastly, we believe implementation of nutritional policies targeting this specific population group will not only positively impact health outcomes, but also reduce escalating healthcare costs due to rapidly aging population worldwide.
Great. I'm glad you mentioned that. And so CNS and CMTF, so the Canadian Malnutrition Task Force, which is a group of clinicians, decision makers, and researchers, which form a standing committee of CNS, they're definitely making efforts in this area. And so for our listeners, what strategies or programs could anyone implement in their countries to perhaps replicate or build upon these efforts to combat malnutrition in their own aging populations?
Well, I think all of us will agree that CNS and CMTF are leading malnutrition research and strategies in the world. There are so many esteemed and outstanding researchers in Canada, and you have developed many useful resources to address malnutrition. Lots for us to learn from. So back to your question on the strategies to combat malnutrition. As the first step, we will need to increase awareness. Research has shown that malnutrition affects 1 in 3 people around the world. It affects all ages, all geographies, all social economy classes, and people in all care settings, including at home. Yet, malnutrition awareness in the community is still very low. We need to start by raising awareness, especially among general practitioners and nurses, who are often the first contact point with patients in the community. Next, it's important for us to screen and intervene. Screening allows healthcare professionals to find and target those who will benefit the most from nutrition support. An early nutrition intervention with oral nutritional supplement can stop or slow down deterioration. If patients are detected early, there are more chances to prevent poor health outcomes, such as increased risk of falls, loss of functional capacity, frequent and prolonged hospitalization. This is just like what we have found in the SHU study, where early nutrition intervention is proven to be an effective way to reduce hospital admission and improve many nutritional and functional outcomes in community-dwelling older adults at risk of malnutrition. Last but not least, a multidisciplinary approach involving healthcare professionals, policymakers, and researchers is vital in ensuring the success of preventing, detecting, and treating malnutrition in older adults. Alone, we can do so little. Together, we can do so much more to combat malnutrition.
I love that message and the approaches that you've outlined so far. So that's wonderful, Agnes. So today's discussion, we pretty much highlighted the critical role nutrition plays in healthy aging, from addressing malnutrition and sarcopenia to improving clinical outcomes through evidence-based interventions like the SHIELD study. We've also learned how partnerships and practical strategies can make a real difference in supporting older adults. So I really thank you so much for sharing your insights and the impactful work that you're doing, and also considering the time difference for your time and expertise. So thank you again for being here on our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Nutrition Conversations. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. If you're interested in hearing more about the latest research in nutrition and health, be sure to check out our website at cns-scn.ca/podcast for upcoming episodes. You can find us on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Simply search for the Nutrition Conversations podcast on your favorite app, and you'll have access to all our episodes in one place. We release new episodes at the end of each month, so mark your calendars and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.